From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Tanisha Spain, in for Brian Mackey. Siblings of special needs children often get less attention, face more parental expectations, and may struggle with their mental health. Being a caregiver or growing up alongside a disabled child often comes with many concerns. Concerns for the child and their well-being, but also concerns with managing one's own social and emotional health. Symptoms range widely in special needs children and can affect everything from physical and motor skills like cerebral palsy to learning and processing, such as dyslexia and ADHD. They can also relate to speech and behavior. Every family of a child with a disability is unique and faces its own set of challenges. On today's show, we'll be exploring those challenges up close with three guests who've navigated the highs and the lows of these supporting sibling relationships. With us now is the woman who inspired this conversation, Lauren Kamnick. She's a parent of children with special needs living in Deerfield. Lauren, welcome to The 21st.
Hi, nice to talk with you.
Also joining us is Nikki Donnelly, University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana PhD student, early childhood special education teacher, advocate, and sibling. Nikki, welcome to The 21st.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And also with us is Brian Donovan. He's an actor, filmmaker, and public speaker. He's also the director and stars in the film Kelly's Hollywood. It's a documentary about his relationship with his sister Kelly, who had Down syndrome. Brian, welcome to The 21st.
Thank you so much for having me, Tanisha.
And listeners, as always, we invite you to join the conversation with us. Have you taken on a caregiving role or grown up with a disabled family member or sibling? Join the conversation by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455, or tweet us at 21st Show. So Lauren, I'm going to start with you this morning. And as I mentioned in your introduction, you actually sort of inspired today's segment. Last month on our show, we had a series of educators on to discuss how the pandemic has sort of emboldened some of the issues within special education. And one of our producers was in contact with you. But before we get more into that, tell us a little bit about your family dynamic. I understand you have three children.
Yeah, so I have three kids. They are 12, 12, and 13. And two of them have special needs. One has the more of the physical and intellectual disabilities. He's got a very, very rare genetic disorder called GAND. He's about one of 250 in the world that have it. And my other son has more of the emotional dysregulation. And I have my quote unquote typical child, my daughter, Vivian, and we're just navigating what it's like on a day-to-day basis with two kids with special needs and, you know, just trying to get through the day. It's rough.
Now, you sent some text to our producer, Erica, in which you titled The Forgotten Piece of the Whole Picture. And I want to read a couple of sentences you wrote. You said, "My sweet, empathetic, beautiful daughter is lonely and sad and ashamed every day. She's 12, and she has no one in her world that understands what it's like to be 12 with siblings with disabilities." Can you talk a little bit more about this forgotten piece, as you call it?
Well, I think there's been a lot of focus lately on caregivers and the support for caregivers, and it's been amazing. I have websites and blogs and social groups, and my closest group of friends here in Chicago are basically moms of kids with special needs. My daughter Vivian doesn't have that. She's navigating middle school, and she doesn't really have anyone to talk about her feelings of loneliness. I mean, the stress that she has to go through every single day and the pressures that she goes through are more significant than I think anyone ever realized. I can understand what it's like to be a parent of a child with a disability. And it is, you know, your emotions range from happy to sad to crying to laughing in a minute, you know, and I have no idea what it's like to be her. And the things that she has, the doctor's appointments, the life that she has is different than most other 12-year-olds.
Interesting, interesting. And Nikki, I'm going to bring you into the conversation now. You wear lots of hats. Understand that you're currently a PhD student at the U of I, Champaign-Urbana. You're also an early childhood special education teacher, and you serve on lots of boards for the disability community. So where did this journey start for you?
Well, with my brother, because my brother's 10 years younger than me. He has autism and intellectual disability. And I was on a very, very different, like I would wanted to be an aeronautical engineer, work for NASA. And, until I really dove into this whole world with my brother and found that I loved it there. So that would be probably what it truly started with him.
And then getting sort of involved, the source of your inspiration.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wonderful.
I think I just realized that I understood him, and I went into the profession because I just felt like other children like him deserved to have somebody that understands them.
Gotcha, gotcha. And Brian, we're going to bring you into the conversation. You're a filmmaker and an actor. And my kids are going to be so pumped that I talked to the character Rock Lee from Naruto. But before we get into your film, I want to know what it was like growing up for you as a sibling. What was that like? What was that experience like?
Yeah, I was very, very fortunate to have kind of a soulmate in my sister, who was born with Down syndrome in 1969. And though my voice is high, I was born in the 60s too. And, you know, it's a very different time, as you can imagine. But my mom set a really nice precedent. I think, you know, she, even though that my mom mourned for 3 days in the hospital, which is in my documentary, and she really, you know, bawled tears for three full days. But once she, you know, found peace with the fact that, okay, I'm bringing someone home with a disability. She, mind you, you know, if you've seen the film or if anybody has seen the film, my father was deaf. So not only was she bringing, someone born with Down syndrome back to two crazy, you know, boys, but a deaf husband who she knew was going to take it very hard because of his, you know, challenges as a disabled man and in a hearing world, you know, but my mom set a really nice precedent in that, you know, she was my sister. That was it. You know, like we didn't, mm-hmm. you know, mind you, I was only 2 and a half when she came home from the hospital. So there wasn't, oh, your sister's born with Down syndrome. You know, there was none of that until we were older. But my sister and I were lucky, and the film reflects that in the sense that we were each other's kind of biggest fans, and we were both performers by nature, and we both kind of cheered each other on and gave us the accolades and the attention that you so desperately want as a child. And so, you know, I had a really, really great relationship with my sister. And, you know, we'll probably delve into this a little bit later, but I also had kind of the hero complex, like wanting to protect her and make sure that she was, you know, okay in the world, and that she met her potential, and that she was recognized as a fully realized human being, as opposed to just her disability and the labels and stereotypes, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But, you know, not to say that there weren't challenges, you know, of course there were, there always are, but I think that's, you know, typical of any family. You know, I watch my two boys, you know, 7 and 9 go to battle every day, you know.
every family's going to have the struggles. It just depends on which ones you're dealing with, right?
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. And it's all relative, of course. But that said, you know, we're here because I think, you know, as you mentioned, Lauren reached out and said, this is a segment worth exploring. And I think she's absolutely right, because I know very well, because I do sibling workshops with teen kids and tween kids. And this is a very common theme. And in fact, there's wonderful resources on Google. If you Google Glass Child, there's a couple of TED Talks about the glass children. And that is the siblings of those with, you know, disabilities. And they're not glass child because they're fragile. They're glass child because often they feel that seen through, you know, that the world of the family is just so, as Lauren described already, you know, it's just such a whirlwind. We're just trying to get through the day. And often the quote unquote neurotypical child is kind of forgotten because they're the easiest of the mm-hmm. variables, right? Mm-hmm. And so, and there's no judgment to any family, and certainly not Lauren, because they are just trying to get through the day. But there is a real element of that in the families. And so it's tricky. It's really tricky. And we'll dig in, I'm sure, a lot more than that.
Yes,
but that's
yes.
my quick intro.
And I will say, you know, you know, as listening to these siblings, it's inspiring. I mean, my daughter, when she was five, I remember specifically where we were in my house, she said, "What do I have to do to get attention in this house? Be hospitalized?"
Ouch.
And I knew she was five. And not that I wasn't giving her attention. I mean, I, from the get-go, when my son was born with this very rare disorder, I didn't want her growing up hating him or resenting him or any of that. I just, but unfortunately, she's the one that can do most of the daily functions by herself.
And sometimes and it comes to that, I imagine.
And when there's, you know, and I'm a single parent, and when, you know, you're trying to get two kids with disabilities out the door, the third kid kind of just has to get her stuff together.
And Lauren, I want to ask you sort of some real world things. What's it been like since the pandemic at your house? You know, how did you guys get through e-learning and lockdowns and just disruption of schedule? Talk a little bit about that.
I will say the lockdown was pretty horrific in my house. My one son, you know, basically needs a one-to-one aide doing the work for him. You know, my son is working on cutting and gluing, and he needs someone to do that with him over the internet, over the computer. And my other son just outright refused. So it's just, it was a time I can't, I don't even think I really remember it. It was such a blur. But I just, the things that, you know, my daughter who is 12 and my son who's 12, she loves her brother and her brothers more than anything. Her brother with a genetic disorder is the happiest kid on the planet. The love of everyone's life. But she's 12 and she's trying to fit in. And, you know, when your brother's making weird sounds in school, or the new sixth graders are staring at him and looking at him like he's weird, she was embarrassed. Mm-hmm. And she came home from school the first day crying because she avoided her brother in school. She ignored him, and she doesn't want to ignore him. She just doesn't know how to handle this. I mean, you want to fit in, but you want to love your brother. It's just I think the emotions that she goes through and things she thinks about is just, it's tough.
Brian, did you experience any of that? You mentioned, you know, you had a bit of a hero complex, but did you ever have those sort of mixed feelings there of not so much being ashamed, but not always feeling so protective?
You know, I didn't, but I will clarify. Back in the 70s, there wasn't, you know, we went to different schools, so I didn't have to deal with, you know, what Vivian's dealing with, Lauren's daughter. You know, I had my own education, I had my own school experience, I had friends from school. A lot of my friends knew Kelly, of course, because, you know, she was a big part of my life, and she kind of went everywhere with me when it wasn't school time. But you know, what Lauren's talking about and what Vivian is experiencing is profound. I mean, I cannot emphasize enough how throttling between, I talk about in my workshops a lot about ambivalence, you know, throttling between love and hate, you know, that thin line, and then those conflicting feelings, and then doing it at 12 or 13. I mean, she's now also coming into the age, you know, she's a tween, she's entering her teen years, which are notoriously like trying to find identity and who you are. And then there's also a selfishness built into those years of like, you know, me, 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 like, I just want to know who I am in the world and who I'm trying to be in the world, and those pressures. And they're ridiculously difficult. I mean, even without that, Vivian would be going through a lot of that anyway, right? At 12 and 13, she'd be trying to figure out who her friend set is and who she's, you know, and then she's got two brothers at the same school that are, yes, they're embarrassing to, in a societal way, right? We don't know, we still don't know how to handle that stuff. And so it's intense. And Vivian, there are support groups. I know Lauren mentioned out of the gate that, you know, she doesn't have anyone to talk to. There are people and groups that she can plug into, and we can talk about that, you know, either on the sidelines or further in the segment, but there are supports. And I think it's imperative that she plugs into those yesterday, you know, like tomorrow, today, whatever, that, you know, that she knows that she's not alone. Because with any group, whatever it is, AA, you know, whatever it is, knowing that you are not alone and that your narrative is not, you know, you're not swimming in this world alone is so important to healing and finding tools to deal and cope. And knowing if she heard, I mean, I promise you, if Vivian heard from one other sibling that's going through something similar, not exactly, but something similar, that will shed so much of what she's going through. That alone, just that one piece of someone hearing someone else with a similar story, a similar feeling, a similar ambivalence, a similar conflicting emotions, mm-hmm. That is brutal for a 12-year-old, you know, to love her brother, but be embarrassed by them at the same time, or walk away from them in the school hall. But it's not, you know, it's not impossible to help Vivian heal, to help her feel like she's not alone, which will be gigantic steps mm-hmm. forward.
We're going to take a quick break right here and continue this conversation right after the break. Stay with us. Listeners, if you're just joining us, we're discussing what it's like being the sibling of a special needs individual. We're speaking with Lauren Kamnick, a parent of children with special needs, as well as Nikki Donnelly, advocate, teacher, and sibling. We're also joined by Brian Donovan. He's an actor and filmmaker, and he's the director and lead in the documentary Kelly's Hollywood. Have you taken on a caregiving role with a grown-up or a disabled family member or sibling? If so, we'd love for you to join the conversation. Give us a call at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. And Nikki, I want to turn to you now and read a text message from one of the listeners, Juanita. She wrote, "We've had this happen in our family. The unaffected child feels like they can't be happy with what the other children are going through. They become the defender of those affected. The children affected feel they can't measure up to the unaffected children. More one-on-one is needed for the affected ones. More is needed for them." So what is your takeaway from that as we were talking about support going into the break? What are your thoughts there?
I think what stands out for me is that one-on-one. And that's where, you know, being an early childhood educator, the working with families, and the minute that parents would hear that I'm a sibling, they're like, wait, what, help me? You know, like parents are desperate to hear this, how they can support all their children. Right. Mm-hmm. And I always tell them just that one-on-one time is important. And I stress, it doesn't have to be a lot. It's more quality versus quantity. Like my mom, and we just had a conversation about this the other day, my mom and I, my mom set aside one day a year. And she would take us over. I'm from California. So she would take us over to the coast, I'd go shopping for school clothes. We'd make a day out of it with lunch, you know, but that one day I had my mom to myself for that one day. And I really looked forward to those days every year, even as a teen, you know, because I was, you know, my brother's 10 years older than me. So,
and let's get into that a little bit more of your personal story, because your adult brother actually moved in with you. So talk us through a little bit about your life and kind of how you got to where things are today.
Yeah. So probably 12 years ago, he moved in with me, and I'll put it on. So I'm a single parent. I had two teens at the time, but I'll put it on the preface that my parents lived next door. We bought property together with two houses on it, knowing that they were wanting to retire mm-hmm. when they were preparing to retire and wanted to travel. So trying to figure out, you know, we didn't want to uproot my brother. So for our family, that was the best situation. He just moved in with me. It was really eye-opening for me. It helped me as an educator, an early educator, to understand those foundational skills of independence and so forth are important, because I didn't like, you know, I had another person to do laundry for and fold. You know, if he could have just folded his own clothes, that would have been huge for me, right?
Right, right.
So, and the little things, you know, brushing his teeth, remembering to brush his teeth and so forth. Like my standard line with him was, I'm not your mom. I don't want to be your mom. You have a mom. I am your sister. You know, you're a grown mm-hmm. man. I shouldn't have to tell you to brush your teeth. You know, you have to do it. Like being lazy doesn't cut it with sister like it does.
You're not going to get away with it, right? No
right,
special treatment.
Right. So, and that's a lot of what you'll hear from siblings, is that we see our siblings more in their capabilities than parents do, because they still see them as a child, where we see them more as an equal. Mm-hmm. So we tend to have more realistic expectations for them.
I was just going to ask how you're able to maintain the boundary, the sibling relationship, when naturally it sort of lends itself to caretaker and sort of that motherly role. So how do you keep that straight?
Well, what for me, the big aha was, as you know, here I am pushing my parents, like future planning, financially, you know, conservatorship or guardianship, or, you know, all these things that I'm navigating with my parents, and having services in place for him, so that he can be as independent in his life as possible and not reliable on me. But it occurred to me, he's 10 years younger than me and will likely outlive me. So now I want my mission kind of shifted, where my daughter, who's 25 now, loves my brother, absolutely loves my brother, and says, if anything happens to you, mommy's moving in with me. So my mission now is like, wait, I need to have him all like as independent as possible, so that she only has to do what he truly cannot do, mm-hmm. right? What he truly needs help with, not just that he doesn't want to, because I don't want to get up and go to work some days, you know, but sometimes in life we don't have that option.
We just got a call in that I want to read to you. Oh, go ahead.
Well, and I will say, you know, I'm not sure, you know, how functional each of your siblings were. My younger son, really, I mean, he's in diapers, he has a feeding tube, he really can't do a lot for himself. And because my daughter is so empathetic and just this great soul of a kid, she wants to help me, and she's watching her mother struggle and she wants to make it better. The problem is she's 12 and that's not her job. And it gets, and I find myself, you know, Vivian, can you just put on his socks for me? Can you do, and that's not her job. And yet, unfortunately, she kind of has to take on that role. And it honestly just isn't fair. And I think what you said, Nikki, is huge, is, you know, my daughter's having a lot of mental health struggles with just personally. And one of the things I'm trying to ingrain in her is, yeah, 90% of our day is hard. It's crappy. You just want to throw your hands in the air and scream. But if there's 10 minutes of your day, 10% of your day that, you know, is good, if it's a 20 minute TV show with me, if it's cooking dinner for 20, whatever it is, you just got to focus on the really good stuff, no matter how long it is.
Absolutely.
We got a message, Ian, just a few minutes ago, and I want to read this and get your comments on it. They didn't want to be on air, but said, I'm a child of a sibling with disabilities. We grew up in the 1960s. I want to urge parents everywhere that hopefully they're concerned about all their kids, but don't take your frustrations out on the child who is typical. That's what happened to me. Really powerful statement. Do any of you relate to any of that? Was there ever those moments of frustration where you felt that way, maybe?
Well, and I will say, and then I'll let the siblings speak, that I was just talking with the other two off air, is when my daughter has something going on, I try my best. But at the end of the day, I am exhausted. I am physically spent. I have no more resources. And that's a really hard thing for her to see. And I know as much as I try, she knows it. She knows how exhausted I am and tries to pretend that she's fine. And, you know, I don't want to be a burden, but she deserves to be a burden. She's 12. Mm-hmm. So it's tough.
And speaking of resources, Nikki, can you comment about some of the resources that are out there for siblings, for kids, and also for adults? Where can people turn when they are feeling tapped out and exhausted?
Yeah, so I'll start with kids. There are Sib Shops by the Sibling Support Project are for 8 to 12-year-olds. And then a lot of the teenagers actually end up kind of going back and helping facilitate Sib Shops, and they're fun, play-based, just a place to bring young siblings of children with disabilities together. And they do have meaningful conversations, but it's kind of focused more around play. And then there is through SibNet, SIBNET, on Facebook groups. There's a Sib Teen, there's a Sib 20s, and then SibNet is for us more aged adults. and it's great. You'll get the whole gamut on there. And it's a place just to connect with people that understand you. You know, I have my network of adult siblings that when I finally got my brother approved for a certain service when he was living with me, when that they were the first one I messaged, because they know what it takes to get that service in place. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I can't stress enough to have somebody in your life that understands you. And okay. Which is why I'm still involved with the California Sibling Leadership Network. And we actually do introduction to SIBS workshops. And because I believe that every child deserves a parent that understands them, right? Mm-hmm. So we have this whole 90-minute workshop that we do educating parents on the needs of the typical sibling.
Okay. And Brian, we're going to turn to you really quick and sort of dig into your film, Kelly's Hollywood, touching documentary about your love for your sister that you've talked about. And for listeners, the film's been screened across film festivals, and it is available for purchase and rental on Amazon. So let's take a listen real quick from a clip from the film.
That's the beauty of normal. It's what you make it. And that's what made Kelly so special to me. And Tempany, who embraced us. She didn't always like competing for my affection, but was incredibly patient as I navigated my way to balancing them both in my life. Couples therapy helped. I tapered some of my codependency issues and Peter Pan syndrome. Tempany adjusted her vision of a normal romantic relationship, and somehow Kelly started to accept all the changes. I knew how fragile it was, but hopeful when I saw them together. I was nervous about how Kelly would react if I took it to the next level, but figured as long as I didn't do anything stupid, we could all be happy. And I knew what would make me happy.
So I want to get into what exactly, you know, obviously you deeply love and care for your sister and she inspired this, but tell me why you thought it was important to share this story, to share your journey, good, bad, ugly, all of it. Why did you think that was important?
Yeah, I thought it was important because I had never really seen a sibling relationship portrayed in film and that story told, I guess. And I probably only came to it because I had accumulated so much footage of my sister through the years, right? And as I, you know, had hundreds of hours of footage, that's when I started to realize, wow, I mean, there's an intimacy here that I'd never seen, because obviously we're siblings, we're very close. So I had an intimacy with my sister and had captured an intimacy, you know, of that sibling relationship that I, again, had never seen. So that was, you know, I just thought, wow, this might be an interesting story. For a long time, I thought it was a very expensive home movie. And then, you know, so, I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. Like, I had no idea, you know, that it would tip and that, you know, it'd be as well received as it has been and got on Showtime and then Amazon. And now, as you say, you can rent it. But but also, I wanted to show, I think it was really important to show, you know, disabilities. There's a huge stigma still in society about disabilities, even though 20% of the population has some form of disability. There's still an incredible, you know, maybe ignorance isn't the right word, but, you know, stereotypes, label, and all that stuff, the easy stuff to go, ugh. And, you know, when you talk about disabilities, the gamut of them, you know, it's still reduced to the worst of it. You know, the drooling, the scenes, the noises that, you know, the Lauren referred to, the, you know, all this stuff, you know, the lowest common denominator stuff and the easy picked fruit, right? But what I wanted to emphasize and what I thought was important was the balance to that. It's like, yeah, of course, there's challenges. It's there's things that are hard. But yet, I wanted to celebrate my sister's spirit and her soul and the complexities of who she was. And again, this fully realized human being and not just the labels, the stereotypes, the brandings, like all of us, right? We all want to be recognized for the fullness of who we are, not just, you know, whatever, the low hanging fruit. And so I thought that was really important because statistically, you know, we're losing our population, those with Down syndrome. And I won't get into all that, but, you know, I just thought this, I just wanted to show the other side. I wanted to show that she brings such a value to humanity and society that I was getting very worried. That society was trying to taper, you know. Excellent. And that doesn't sit very well with me at all. And Nikki, I'm sure, will say the same. And as Lauren will say the same too. I know as hard as her life is right now, and she is deep in the trench. I know that she would also say that her two boys are remarkable in so many beautiful, profound ways that that only they can show society. You know, how to be better.
All right. And we've got just about a minute left. Nikki, I want to pivot and ask you really quickly, what do you hope people know about siblings and hope for the sibling community?
Just that there needs to be more of us out there that connecting with other people like us, right? So, but we do see, because we grew up seeing this amazing thing that Brian just shared, like we tend to see that in the world, what amazing opportunity, where other children may not have that opportunity to see this beautiful world as we've grown up. But
I will interrupt real quick and say, just because I think that's such a good point, is that my daughter appreciates, it's hard, and what you guys have gone through is hard, but she appreciates the little things in life that most people don't appreciate.
Lauren, Nikki, and Brian, I want to thank you so much for this incredible conversation. I wish we could talk longer, but we have run out of time. So thank you so much for being here. And we're going to be back just after this with an interview with a hip-hop producer who's making beats.